was a bummer of a game. There's no two ways about it. Whenever there's a blowout loss, 13-3, the Jays lose this evening at Rogers Center. But Ben, you know, whenever it's a massive deficit like this, I'm never sure how many sweeping declarations should be made. Because despite the ugly box score, I genuinely am not sure, like, what, if anything, we learned all that new about this team. Perhaps that is an indictment on the season as a whole, now 7-22 against the American League East, specifically 1-8 against the Baltimore Orioles. But a lot of non-competitive ABs tonight from virtually everyone at different times. And all the moments where we collectively thought more runs would come across the plate for the Jays, pretty much all of those moments got snuffed out in short order.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, you know, a really smart thing that Caleb said near the end of the game, where you initially look at, you know, Yenesis Cabrera and you're like, wow, the game was 4-3 and that really slipped away while he was in. But then Pearson gets hit, and this was Caleb talking when Hicks was in. It was just like, I don't know, everyone that they throw out there, you know, maybe with the exception of Trevor Richards, who looked really good, good for him. But everyone else that they threw out there got rocked tonight on the pitching side, and you mentioned on the offensive side. It was, I mean, just a terrible game in terms of competitiveness. Yeah. I don't know if you should make a referendum on everyone or no one, because it was one of those games where, I mean, with the exception of the two home runs, we just have five hits the whole game, and one of them is an Ernie Clement garbage time double. I think they essentially did nothing successful throughout that whole game. There are some tiny, tiny moral victories that I think can be taken away, but I really have to emphasize tiny.
Yeah, Danny Jansen hitting another home run was pretty cool. Brandon Belt going yard as well was always fun, but ultimately, I'm not sure those are going to move the needle, and perhaps doubly so on a trade deadline day, like Ben Wagner was saying during the broadcast tonight, that perhaps some expectations had been gotten to a certain point for certain people. Certainly for me, hand up. I thought there would be more stuff to talk about post-trade deadline, but here we are. But we'll get to all of it here on Jays Talk across the Sportsnet Radio Network, streaming live on Sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Show Ali, Ben Schulman with you. We're taking your calls and texts. Phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cellular device, 590-590. Is where you can text us. That's the People's Text Line, which is always open. Look, you guys can weigh in on anything you want, obviously. This is your show. I want to hear from you guys. But here is what I would like to discuss with everyone tonight, and you can call or text with your answer. Did the Blue Jays do enough for you personally at the deadline? Was it what you wanted? Was more needed? What was it less relative to expectations? Like, if they called certain guys up from the minors, would that make a difference? We want all of your thoughts on the trade deadline, which is now in the rear view, and we will get to it all on Jays Talk this evening. Ben, look, big losses, awful to discuss. We'll discuss all of it. But I do want to start real quick by discussing Hyunjin Ryu, just because he made his return after over 400 days on the shelf. 14 months was the last time Hyunjin Ryu had pitched. And, like, frankly, I just wanted to say that he is, at age 36, making a start at Major League Baseball after major surgery on his elbow. That's wild. Like, I'm just a few years younger than Ryu, but when I stump my toe getting out of the shower, I'm ready to be put on the 60-day IL. So I have nothing but admiration for Ryu after making his way back to Major League action.
Yeah, and I don't think this is going to warm so many people's hearts necessarily, but I do think one of the positives is it's his first start back from Tommy John, like you mentioned, his age. And he got through the start today, and there isn't an inkling of anything that he's feeling bad in his elbow or that his arm is feeling bad or that he didn't look 100% healthy. He looked, you know, with the exception of maybe some command things we can talk about, he looked like Hyunjin Ryu. So I do think that in a game where you get just absolutely smacked around by the division leaders in the Baltimore Orioles, one of the few positives you can take away is the fact that Hyunjin Ryu made a start and looks to be healthy, and at least there's some stuff that you can build on there. I think, you know, especially early in the game, despite the fact we had heard that his command was incredibly pinpoint in a lot of bullpen sessions and in, you know, his rehab appearances leading up, his command was not pinpoint to start this game. And when you're not hitting your spots as Hyunjin Ryu, like, guys are going to hit 87 mile per hour fastballs like nobody's business. He peaked at 91. He looked a lot better, I think, in innings, you know, kind of 3, 4, and 5. comes out for the sixth, unfortunately gives up a homer right away and gets taken out of the game. But I do think that it was an okay return for Ryu, certainly a very positive return health-wise. And, you know, he got hit around pretty hard today. There's no doubting that. But considering that he had been off for so long and the fact that, you know, he came out here and at least put the Blue Jays in somewhat of a position to win. Like, I don't think that he was incredible today, but I don't think that they lost the game because of Hyunjin Ryu. I think that you can at least walk away with just the tiniest of consolations from that.
Yeah, like, he did absolutely throw some meatballs, some spicy meatballs to the top of the Orioles order in that first inning, right? Like, they made him pay. We saw a lot of early curveballs and ABs from Ryu. Caleb mentioned this. He clearly was trying to use that, like, slow, tumbling curve to set up batters, kind of yo-yo guys. But and the curveball actually was responsible for quite a few outs for Ryu today. He induced a lot of weak contact. And, for example, there was a moment in the first where, you know, he set up a double play that would have normally ended the inning, but Gunnar Henderson, I believe it was, beat it out, and he gives up hits on basically every one of his pitches, the fastball, the cutter, certainly the curveball as well, but he did settle in as the game went on, and like you said, the fastball ticked up to 91 miles an hour. When he can throw that fastball at that speed, I think he is enough of a precision guy that he can get that ball all over the plate, but ultimately, yeah, the final stat line, it's not going to wow anyone by any means, right? It's like you said, it's like the slimmest of silver linings. 5-plus innings, because he gave the home run to Henderson at the very beginning of the next inning, so 5-plus for him. 9 hits, 4 runs, all of which were earned, 3 strikeouts, the 1 walk, and like I mentioned, the 1 home run to Henderson. But again, like, there, for a guy who, like, literally did not pitch in 400 days, I was generally impressed. I was actually surprised that they sent him back out there for the 6th. Like, Schneider had said to us pregame in his office that Ryu was slated for 85 to 100 pitches. He was fully stretched out. So maybe that was a part of the decision-making process. Maybe he lobbied to go back in, but it did kind of, like, it was kind of surprising because the Blue Jays have said multiple times over the course of the year that you get a guy right, you get him out there, and then that's it. Like, you get him sitting down, feeling good about himself. And if you had gotten 5 innings of work and 3 earned runs from Ryu in his first game in over 400 days, you take that and you run. But they sent him back out there, and then, of course, like, in a handful of pitches, Henderson goes yard. It's not even a particularly cheap shot. He, like, blasted that one. And then he has to leave feeling kind of bad about himself, and Trevor Richards comes in without a clean inning. I don't know. It was kind of a strange decision, which is kind of funny to say because we've all been lobbying for starters to go longer in ball games.
Yeah, I think a couple things went into it. You know, he was only at 75 at that point, despite the fact he had been hit. Hyunjin Ryu, you know, so rarely struggles with control. His command a little bit off today in terms of where he was putting it in the zone, but walking guys is really never much of an issue for him. And I think that the stretch of 17 games in 17 days was a big part of it. I mean, they have 6 guys in this rotation. They are taking someone out of the bullpen by doing that right now. And therefore, they have to ask for a little bit more, I think, out of their starters. And then you pair that up with the fact that, you know, it's a left-handed hitter coming up to start it. And Henderson hit it hard. It did hit the top of the wall and go out. I do think that there was some bad luck today for Ryu. I mean, no doubt Henderson hit that ball hard. You know, the Adley Rutschman RBI single in the second inning is really just a roller that was directly in the middle of the infield but was not hit very hard either. But I think that there was a chance Ryu comes out almost right after that, to be honest, anyway, but unfortunately, it's the worst result possible against Gunnar Henderson, which happened a couple times today for different guys. Oof. Against Gunnar Henderson. Yeah. He hits the home run to spoil Ryu's line a little bit, because I do agree. I was talking on 960 yesterday in Calgary, and I did think that, you know, ending up going 5 innings and 3 runs would have been a huge positive. Like, I kind of said that verbatim. And I don't think 5 innings and 4 runs is a complete nightmare. Again, like you said, it's 400 days, 36 years old. But I do somewhat understand, just with the number of games coming up and the fact that they have fewer relievers, they have to put a little bit more on the starters, I think. And I think we'll see that. You know, we saw it with Chris Bassitt, who gave up 4 runs early yesterday. They left him in there for probably longer than they would have 2 weeks ago. And I think we'll see that with guys like Kikuchi coming up. Of course, Kevin Gausman and Jose Berríos as the Boston series starts as well.
That's Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. Of course, Yusei Kikuchi slated to take the mound for the Blue Jays tomorrow against Grayson Rodriguez. The Blue Jays look to get their second win of the season against the Baltimore Orioles. But that game goes tomorrow right here down at the Rogers Center, 7.07 p.m. Eastern, 4.07 p.m. Pacific on the Sportsnet Radio Network. All right, let's get to your phone calls. A lot of people on hold. We'll get to all your phone calls. Let's get to them. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Russ in New Jersey. Russ, what's up? Welcome to Jay's Talk. What's on your mind today?
Good evening, guys. I think, you know, you hit it before on the right on the nose why they sent him out that inning. You know, Henderson's hitting 200 against left-handed pitching. He's a great hitter, the guy. But, you know, with 17 games, and Bassett did that as bad as he was. Well, he wasn't good last night, but he had like so close to probably 60 pitches in two innings. But, you know, he wiggled out to give them six innings last night, which is a big help because, like you said, playing 17 games in 17 days with one, you know, down one reliever, you know, you got to get more out of the starters. You know, what surprises me mostly is the Orioles have. First of all, they took the season series, so I know it's not going to make a difference, but any tie, the Orioles, you know, already have the season series, and so do the Red Sox. But, you know, what surprises me more about the Orioles is you want to tell me they have a good offense is one thing. Of the eight games we've played them, we've scored three runs or less in six of them, and one of them that we scored was that 11-6 game, which lasted forever, which I was there in Baltimore. We were Bassett pitched. We were down like 11-2 in the seventh or eighth inning. So they can't hit their pitching, which is surprising, not, you know, that shocking this year. And remember, they're playing without one of their better players in Mullins in the outfield. He didn't play last series, and he hasn't played these two games, and they're going to get him back. So, you know, it's definitely concerning. You know, but, you know, you talk about the bullpen. You threw Pearson out there tonight. You know, he threw 27 pitches last night. And, you know, it wasn't the game wasn't out of hand. It was 4-1 last night when he came in the seventh. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of pressure on the bullpen if the starters don't go deep. In regards to the trade deadline, all I want to say is, yeah, the Jays, you know, I wasn't in the meeting, and I don't know who they could have had or who they didn't get or who they should have gotten. You know, you never know. And you'll hear a lot of stories. But I will say that the teams that the Blue Jays are battling from behind, you know, in the old days, Steinbrenner would have made 10 moves, you know what I mean? But the Yankees aren't any good. And I don't believe in the Angels at all. Trout's not coming back for 3 weeks, and I think they have the hardest schedule. I'm not a big believer in Boston with their pitching. I think the team that, you know, maybe scares you in the sixth spot the most is Seattle, if they can, you know, put it together. And, you know, they have some players that have done it before. So I really think that I was surprised, but that Boston or, you know, maybe even the Yankees, who I don't think is any good, didn't make any moves to really improve. But I think, you know, the Blue Jays definitely should be there in the playoffs at the end. No one really made any great, you know, move to really help their teams that are behind the Jays today. So that's my outlook.
All right, Russ, I appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us here on Jay's Talk. Ben, you know, Russ talking about the trade deadline, certainly. I find it hard to disagree with his assessment of the teams behind the Blue Jays, certainly, because the two teams ahead of the Blue Jays in the American League East standings did make a couple of, I would say, relatively significant moves. The Orioles, I'm not sure that Jack Flaherty is going to be as impactful as, let's say, Dylan Cease, but I mean, it's certainly, given what their team needs are, Jack Flaherty makes a lot of sense, and so does Aaron Civale for the Tampa Bay Rays, albeit that was not a trade that was made today, it was made yesterday. But I mean, yeah, like Keenan Middleton, is that really going to change the outlook for the New York Yankees? Is Luis Urias really going to change the outlook for the Boston Red Sox? Like Trevor Story returning, probably going to make more of a difference to the Red Sox than Luis Urias, I would think. But I do agree with Russ's assessment that the Blue Jays, you know, they're generally speaking, they're not an amazing team, but they're not necessarily, I don't know. Like, there's a difference between being a good team and a great team, and I think the Jays hover around the good way more than perhaps they should.
On the subject of the deadline, I mean, at least in my opinion, which this contradicts about really what I'm about to say, but I feel like it's fairly objective that the Blue Jays at least had a better deadline than the Red Sox and the Yankees. Like you said, I mean, what's really, like, Luis Urias, they sent him immediately down to AAA. So I think that tells you all you need to know about the impact of that move. And then I like Keenan Middleton. I kind of thought he'd be an interesting guy for the Blue Jays, but that's literally all they did. The Yankees, they grabbed Sam Howard too, who's a 27-year-old who for the most part has struggled in his major league career. I mean, it was really, really like non-impactful moves from Boston and New York. I'm pretty lukewarm on the Flaherty move, to be honest, also with the fact that he's a high walk, low strikeout guy with a 4.43 ERA. It frankly sounds like a lot of guys that are in this Baltimore rotation right now, but I think Russ's biggest point to take away from that call is what the Blue Jays have done offensively against the Orioles. It probably wouldn't have mattered tonight. They gave up 13 runs, but you know, they are making some guys who are slightly above average major league starters look like really, really good major league starters when they play the Orioles. And you're just not going to win games putting up 2 runs, 3 runs, 4 runs. Their offense has been better in the second half. They're obviously missing their best offensive player right now, but they need to do more than come up with 4 hits, one of them being a blooper from Brandon Belt off of Kyle Bradish. Like, they just have to do more than that. And if they don't, they're not going to win these games, because teams, you know, they're winning some games against the Rays and the Yankees, but the Orioles and the Red Sox are really purely offensive built teams, and they're not keeping up with them in these games that are going to be high scoring just by nature of who they're going up against.
Yeah, like you can't be leaving games with Kyle Bradish throwing less than 100 pitches, 7 innings of work. He allowed 4 hits, 3 earned runs. He gave up 2 home run shots, the Belt home run, and, of course, the Jano home run. 7 strikeouts, just the 1 walk. Like, I'm not saying Kyle Bradish by any means is a bad pitcher, but he's not a world beater. He's not like Cy Young incarnate standing out there on the mound. Like, and you know what? Neither is Kyle Gibson, and neither is Dean Kramer, and neither is I know Tyler Wells got option, but like neither is he who the Jays faced earlier in the season. Like that, I feel like we have seen too many times, and this is not a 2023 problem only. This happened in 2022 a lot of the time, and it also happened a couple times in 2021. It just in this era, we have seen the Blue Jays make mortal pitchers look like it's like Nolan Ryan out there, and it's a little deflating sometimes, because it feels as though they're right on the cusp of breaking through offensively, and then they don't, and it's a double play and the inning ends, and or a bloop hit on the other team's side goes off a guy. I don't know. It's a little disappointing to see those kinds of approaches offensively.
Yeah, I really think, and you know, we'll dive way more into the trade deadline, I'm sure, with the callers coming up. Like, for me, if you look at this team and why they're not where we think they are, I really don't think it has to do with what they added at the trade deadline. I personally, at least, like, I think you can attest to this show. We've done a lot of shows together. For the whole year, I've pretty much expected them to add something to the bullpen and a bat that doesn't hit higher than 6th in the order. And that is kind of what happens. Like, I know there was some Teoscar stuff that got a little bit going in the morning, but he didn't even end up going anywhere, and the Phillies were interested in him too. So who really knows, like Russ said, where that happened? I mean, I really think when you look at this team, it's about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's about George Springer, who now has an OPS below 700. I mean, it's really a lot, you know, a lot goes to George Springer in a certain way. It's about Dalton Varsho, who has an over 100-point drop in his OPS from this year to last year, although he's been very good defensively. Alejandro Kirk with near an 100-point drop from OPS from this year to last year. Like, a lot of this just has to do with guys who were performing last year are not finding a way to do it this year. And I think that goes beyond the trades they made in the offseason or the trades they did or didn't make at this trade deadline.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Sam from Hamilton, our next caller here on Jays Talk. Sam, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys. First of all, you know, obviously it is getting frustrating. You know, I think it was the bottom of the fifth. Brandon Belt gets a double. And then Vladdy gets out on the first pitch, Chapman strikes out, or Springer gets out, and then just you can't advance the runner. You can't even drive him in. And it's just like this whole season. But there is a stretch of games during the end of August, from August 28th to September 10th, where they play the 4 worst teams in baseball. Like that is our season right there. Like, I know they're probably not going to go 12-0, but like 10-2 has to be like the minimum, right?
Yeah, I would think so, eh, Sam? And I appreciate the call, man. Thank you for joining us here on Jays Talk. I don't disagree. Like, Ben, you know me. I'm not the kind of person who says oh boy, like you can expect, like Sam's saying, you're going to expect 12-0 against all these teams. But much like the run-up to the All-Star break, especially now that they are 7-22 against the American League East, and I know, before you yell at me, I know that that number 7-22, the real yucky part of that number comes from the Orioles specifically and from the Boston Red Sox, the team they're playing in this six-game stretch, or I guess seven-game stretch, with the four-gamer against Baltimore and the three-gamer at Fenway Park starting on Friday. But, I mean, you look at what Sam's talking about, the Blue Jays really do have to take advantage of playing teams like the Nationals and the Rockies and the Royals and the Athletics, which is happening towards the end of August, beginning of September. Again, like, I'm not saying you have to, you can, because you have to beat the good teams. You can't just only beat up on bad teams and lose to the good teams and that's your season. But, I mean, the Blue Jays do have to start doing a little bit more against the good teams and taking advantage of some of their matchups against teams like the Rockies, for example.
Yeah, and I think you bring up the All-Star break right before it, the two series they win against the White Sox and the Tigers. They go 5-1. You know, they somehow get no-hit by the Tigers in the middle, but we'll cast it aside because at least they went 5-1 in those two series. And I do think, for the most part, the Blue Jays have done a good job against the bad teams. I haven't checked it today, but I believe they still have the best record outside of their division of any team in Major League Baseball. Like, they're doing a solid job against the majority of major league teams, frankly. They beat the Angels in a series, who are not a bad baseball team. They lose an extra innings in game three. I think you would have loved to sweep, but it is what it is. They beat the Dodgers in a series right before that. They swept Arizona in the second half. I have full faith in the Blue Jays in that part of the schedule coming up with Washington, Colorado, Oakland, and Kansas City, that they're going to win their games. And I have full faith, kind of like Russ said, that they're most likely still, you know, despite these struggles against the division, a team that's going to make the playoffs. But if they're not going to beat teams in the division, it does make it a lot more difficult to imagine them making a deep run in the playoffs, because there's going to be, at a minimum, you'd think, three AL East teams in the playoffs, including the Blue Jays. It easily could be four. And what's going to happen? Are they going to run into the Orioles in the ALDS and get beaten by 8 runs every time? Like, they have to find a way to compete with these teams. Like you said, it's Boston and Baltimore that's really been the problem. To be 1-14 against those teams is unfathomable, but it's the reality we're sitting in right now.
That's Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali, taking your calls and texts here on Jays Talk. George in Port Dover is next in line. George, what's on your mind? Welcome to Jays Talk today.
Hey, thanks for taking my call and having fun listening to you guys. Listen, I could talk about player performance all night, but tonight I just want to talk a little higher up in the food chain. Sure. I'm so disappointed in Ross Atkins and the performance at the deadline. He took the easy reach of the low-hanging fruit, really. He brought three players from St. Louis, last place in the NL Central. There's a reason they were selling. I see that a bit lazy on his part. Also, we never got the bat that we so desperately needed, and I think that showed tonight. Thanks. I'll just sit back and take a lesson.
Hey, George, thank you for joining us here on the program. Look, I definitely think when it comes to making deals with the Cardinals and Atkins, and I guess some people will just say, look, I don't believe this, that's not true or whatever, but Atkins, and I'll take him for his word at this specifically, he did say that in the process of making a trade, like the Cabrera trade, like certainly the Jordan Hicks trade. And I actually do think, despite the fact that Hicks got hit around a little bit today, I'm not even sure it would have mattered based on who was on the mound. He had pitched one time in the last 13 days. So he like needed to get some work in. But in the process of getting Hicks in there, Ben, on the team, I should say, not into the game today, but on the team, it did kind of feel like Atkins leaned a little heavily on the they already knew our system, they knew our prospects, we'd done a lot of our due diligence on both teams, so it was easier to get a trade for Paul DeJong done. And we can talk about Paul DeJong in a second here, and you kind of alluded to it earlier in the sense that he probably won't be batting higher than sixth on this ball club, for example. But at the same time, when I look around, not at the pitchers that were traded at the deadline, but I look around at the bats that were traded in the lead up to today, I genuinely think the most impactful bat that was traded was Tommy Pham. He might have been the only, like the most impactful bat that was traded. Like Tim Anderson did not get traded. Nolan Arenado did not get traded, right? Like a lot of the guys we perhaps all thought would move from a position player standpoint, like the really lethal mean, scary bats. Teoscar Hernandez, for example, was off discussed. He did not get traded. Like a lot of the bats that a lot of teams, I'm sure, were going after just ended up staying put. Whether that ends up being a good thing for these teams, I don't know. But ultimately, it does kind of feel like it's just there weren't that many impactful bats available at the deadline, even if Atkins maybe did go out and ask on them.
Yeah, and on the point of the last place team, I mean, barely anyone sold at this deadline, frankly. I'm not exactly sure what the strategy was.
The
for
Mets
teams
sold
like
the most.
Boston.
The Mets are they were yeah, the team that sold more than anyone else, I think.
It was the Mets, the White Sox, and St. Louis, basically. Those were the only people open for business. I mean, you know, Kansas City made a couple of moves. You had, you know, an Oakland move here or there, like Sam Moll to the Reds and stuff like that. But I agree with you. I think if there's a point, you know, to look at and maybe get disappointed, it's when you look at the prospect that went the other way for Tommy Pham. It's an unranked prospect in the top 30 of the Mets system now, and I believe he was unranked in the Arizona system. It's a 17-year-old kid in right. Dominican Summer League. It feels like there was comparable options or even more to offer. But again, it's so hard to know. But it feels like you could have offered more than a 17-year-old from Dominican Summer League and picked up a guy like Tommy Pham. So I do think that's unfortunate. But pretty much outside of him, Mark Canna's offensive numbers, incredibly similar to Paul DeYoung's. You mentioned Tim Anderson just having a terrible season. Like, he's been hurt, but there's no way around it. Like, I personally would take Paul DeYoung over Tim Anderson, coming off a major injury, having by far the worst season of his career any day. I'm shocked Teoscar didn't move, kind of like the Yankees and Red Sox. I don't totally understand what the Seattle Mariners did today. They traded their closer but didn't sell Teoscar Hernandez, which – who's a free agent at the end of the season, and they're, you know, at best a medium competitive baseball team in a market yeah. that doesn't draw a ton of free agents. So I don't really understand why they held on to him. But yeah, I think that it was a weird market. Like, the Texas Rangers, Houston Astros, and Los Angeles Angels made pretty big pushes. There was a huge arms race in the AL West, mostly due to Scherzer and Verlander going. The Diamondbacks traded for a lot of guys, none of them particularly incredible. They also traded away their closer in Andrew Chafin, although they, you know, acquired other high-leverage relievers that will replace him. But it was a weird deadline. I think Pham is really the one, kind of like you mentioned, where you look at and you just wonder, why couldn't the Blue Jays have picked that guy up? Because the price he went at didn't feel so steep, and the Blue Jays had more prospects to offer. I thought that they didn't give up that much in their other deals and still had a little bit to exhaust maybe out of their system.
Let's continue taking calls. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Gary joining us from the West Coast. He's in Vancouver. Gary, let's continue chatting about the trade deadline. What did you think?
Can you hear me to begin with? Okay.
Yes, right? I can hear you. Yeah.
Good. I listened to our general manager, and I say our because I happen to like the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm a Matt Chapman fan and all this. Our biggest problem is this. We got rid of Gurriel. We got rid of Teoscar Hernandez. And we got two guys that I don't care about the defense. Hernandez was a great defensive outfielder. Gurriel, same way. Nobody's going to run against these two kids. And we got two guys that, I'm sorry, but bad trade. The other thing is this. Trade deadline, in my opinion, our general manager shouldn't be there because, as far as I'm concerned, George Springer's having a bad year. Vladdy isn't Vladdy. Matt Chapman, he's up and down. And then after that, you don't have anybody besides Merrifield that anybody cares about. And who is he going to trade? You guys watch it. I watch it. Who's he going to trade? And it's difficult. But if you think that we're going to beat the Orioles if we play against them, if we get a playoff spot, good luck with that, because they just handed our lunch to them, and it was ugly tonight. Three walks and bang, it's over the fence, And that was a no-doubter.
Gary, so, appreciate the call, man. I do appreciate it. There are a lot of people on hold, but I want to get to as many people as possible tonight. But I did want to touch on a couple things Gary said with you, Ben. Notably, George Springer. And we can talk about Springer in a sec, but Nate Pearson, because he did say he was talking about the walk, Anthony Santander, absolute bomb. Like, Santander did not just squeak that over the wall. He launched that ball. I think it went off like the facing of the 200 level. It was insane. He crushed that ball. And you know what? I love to talk about the circle of trust. Unfortunately, now that Mitch White is not on this squad anymore, I do kind of wonder when, and Blair has talked about this before in terms of maybe Pearson's best years will be on another team, and obviously he did not get traded at the deadline, but still, you look forward a little bit. I mean, when you look at the bottom of the bullpen, the guy's getting the lowest leverage spots. Now that Mitch White is gone, like, is that guy Nate Pearson? Because I almost feel like Jay Jackson, and he's on the emergency medical list because he is tending to his newborn son. So I wish the Jacksons all the best. But even Jay Jackson, a journeyman reliever, has probably earned a longer look over Pearson. And again, maybe that's being a prisoner of the moment to a certain extent. But in terms of high leverage situations, it kind of feels like Pearson has slipped out of that high leverage inner circle of trust spot.
Yeah, also, you know, just want to wish my best to Jay Jackson and his family. I think that the Blue Jays kind of showed how they feel about that when they decided to send Nate Pearson down instead of Jay Jackson when they acquired Yenesis Cabrera. I mean, there were different ways you could have gone with that, and they made the decision pretty clear there that they were trusting Jackson more at that point than Pearson. Pearson came back up, frankly, because Jordan Romano got injured, and you wonder if he'd be up right now if Jay Jackson didn't have to go on the emergency medical leave list right now. So I really think that, you know, for better or worse, there were definitely some positives, I think, to draw from the early to middle parts of the season from Nate Pearson. But I think when Chad Green is healthy and Jay Jackson is ready to go and Jordan Romano is healthy, like, I don't see how Nate Pearson is in this bullpen, frankly. I don't think he's the bottom leverage guy. I think they probably have him back down at AAA for now. And that's not to say that things, you know, can't be different in the future. Things change quickly. Zach Pop was the star of this bullpen. The Blue Jays haven't seen him in a while because he's been struggling at AAA since he went on the injured list. And things could turn for him positively in the same way things could turn for Pearson positively, like they did out of nowhere almost at the start of the season. But I think for right now, he's more likely even outside of the picture in a healthy bullpen. Part of that has to do with the depth of the Blue Jays bullpen. I still really like, I think a lot of people aren't going to be happy with the Jordan Hicks addition because of what happened today. Jordan Hicks was probably the top reliever available on the market. I still really like that addition. I think they're super deep, and I think that probably cost Pearson his start with him just not being that consistent over the last month or so.
Yeah, you look at the current guys in the bullpen. Let's see. Certainly Jordan Romano, because Romano is, but he's on the 15-day IL, but you're still counting Romano, obviously. But Romano, Eric Swanson, Trevor Richards, Tim Meza, Yenesis Cabrera, Jimmy Garcia, and Jordan Hicks.
Like,
it's just, yeah. And so that's definitely a bullpen I don't know if it's like the best bullpen in all of Major League Baseball, because I admit I don't know what the seven long rotation, let's call it, of relievers for every team is, but it's a pretty good bullpen. And it's true, when Chad Green is augmenting that bullpen as well, and maybe Zach Pop, you're right. Maybe there's a chance that Nate Pearson is not on the team at all. Like, if you're talking about postseason rosters, is Nate Pearson on the postseason roster? And right now, at least, I would say no. I mentioned I wanted to talk about George Springer. Let's get our next caller in here. Dan is calling in from Aurelia. And Dan, I know you want to talk about George Springer. So let's the three of us have our conversation about George. Because I think, what, 0 for 33 or 0 for 34 now? He's not having a very good year, is he?
Yeah, guys. You know, today was obviously pretty frustrating one as a Jays fan. We can get to Springer in a sec. I had more time to think about it, you know, as I'm driving home here listening to other callers. And, you know, obviously today market was dry. I don't know if Ross Atkins really could have done much to improve this team majorly. Like, I don't know. I don't know who was available. But, you know, what I was thinking about is a saying that any baseball player has heard, any baseball fan has heard, and it's just, that's baseball. And when I think of that, you know, I think of why is Vlad Guerrero not the Vlad Guerrero we saw in 2021? Why is Alec Manoa not a candidate this year? You know, why is Nate Pearson in high leverage roles 2 weeks ago and now even has him to, you know, throw in a game that's already out of reach? And it just, there's never really a true answer. Sometimes it's just that's baseball. Maybe the Jays have a strong team and they're just not who they were last year. They're having a bad season. So I don't know if this is a team that, you know, is just a fringe wildcard team this year or if they can really compete. But, you know, it's my guess is as good as yours. So I just wanted to ask you guys what you guys think and kind of hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for the call, Dan. I appreciate you joining us. It's true. I mean, look, like the question as to are they a better team perhaps this year than last year, I think they are certainly better in some respects. They are certainly better from a pitching standpoint. They're one of the best teams in Major League Baseball from a pitching standpoint, and certainly from a defensive standpoint. From an offensive standpoint, I mean, Dan kind of talked about it, Ben, but like for example, certainly George Springer, which we can chat about now if you like, or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like, these are two of the more important guys on the team having, I think in Vladdy's case, like an okay year, but perhaps less so by the lofty standards that you expect for him, and certainly for George Springer as well, even if you like didn't know anything about George Springer, you pay a guy like $100-something million, $150 million, whatever it is, I think you do expect a little bit more. I'm sure he expects more of himself too, because I've said this a million times, and Barker has said this too, but baseball is supposed to be fun. Doesn't really look like Springer is having that much fun as of late because he has not had that much success. But offensively, I'm not sure they're as good a team as they were in previous years, but you know what, like I said it all before as well, I think they're a good team. But I think there's a clear difference between being a good team and perhaps a great team.
I do think some points from that call, you know, we've talked a little bit today, especially with the trade deadline being in focus, about the moves that they made in the offseason and throughout the year. A lot of people have talked about the way that they shaped this team. And really, I do wonder, you know, as much as, yes, they shaped the team to be a little bit more defensive rather than offensive, and a lot of people have harped on the fact that they're not as good of an offensive team and they gave up Gurriel and Hernandez. How good of an offensive team would they have been if Guerrero had the year last year that he's having this year, if Springer had the year last year that he's having this year, if, you know, if Alejandro Kirk had the year last year that he's having this year, if Santiago Espinal had the year like that. And it's not even just those guys. Like, to a certain extent, I agree with the that's baseball thing. I'm not sure how much you could have predicted that almost half of their starting lineup would have some of the worst years of their career, or at least worst years of their last 4 or 5 seasons. And I don't really know how to explain that. And I know some people want to turn it then to maybe, you know, who the hitting coach is, but it's the same hitting coach they had last year, or what's going on with the management situation, but it was the same front office last year, or what's going on with the manager, but they had a really good record under John Schneider last year compared to the record that they had under Charlie Montoyo. So it is sometimes, I think, just really difficult to explain. Baseball is one of those sports, like, you know, Connor McDavid's going to be good next year. There's no doubt about that. And you have a pretty good idea that Austin Matthews is going to score a lot of goals, even if he did have a slight down year from, you know, this season to last season. Baseball, it feels like, tends to fluctuate a little bit more. You know, Bryce Harper went from MVP to guy people didn't talk about to MVP again in not that long of a stretch. But it is baffling at times to sit here and think about, you know, how many guys in concert are having such major down years for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And you know what? With Vladimir Guerrero Jr. specifically, it does kind of feel as though with Bo out, and we still don't know how long Bo will be out. John Schneider, of course, saying earlier today that he did not suffer any significant structural damage. According to the MRI, it's just kind of inflammation in the knee. Ross Atkins later clarifying when he spoke to the media about 15 minutes prior to first pitch tonight that it was inflammation of the patellar tendon. So, of course, no tears or breaks or anything like that, which, of course, is always exceptional news. I think they're going to learn more about perhaps what an IL stint could look like. I don't know. They didn't say that he would go on the IL, but that certainly they're waiting to see if it's going to happen or if it's a possibility in the next day or two. But with Bo out, I mean, like, whatever Paul DeJong turns out to be, which is probably going to be a very average bat, a very good defensive glove that can be moved around. But, I mean, you look at Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and George Springer, the team will need more. They need more from everyone. Don't get me wrong. But they need more from the best guys on the team. And I would argue that up until maybe just a little while ago, Bo was holding up that end of best guys on the team playing very well. But they need more from Vladdy and George because they're the, you know, for lack of a better word, faces of the franchise. And when the faces of the franchise, the biggest bats in the middle of the order, they're the ones not producing, then it's I'm not saying it's a trickle-down effect necessarily, but, you know, it does kind of fall more on those guys than it falls on, like, Dalton Varsho, for example.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, they, you know, when they went into spring training, Dalton Varsho was hitting seven in the order. Like, they weren't expecting him to hit. If you came into this year expecting Dalton Varsho to hit at the same rate as Lourdes Gurriel, I apologize, but you just had some sort of unrealistic expectation. Like, we had a caller, Gary, from the West Coast earlier, I believe it was, and I apologize, but I disagree that, you know, Lourdes Gurriel and Teoscar Hernandez were great outfielders. I just don't think that's the case. They were great offensive outfielders, but there was a whole different skill set. But when you look at Vladdy, who, you know, had a down year last year and is 30-ish points lower on his OPS and is on pace to hit, you know, probably seven or eight fewer home runs, which really is more important on this team where he's even more of an offensive focus. And then you look at George, who, you know, had an 814 OPS last year, which was one of the lower OPSs he had had in a while, and now he's 120 points below that on his on-base plus slugging. I mean, you know, that's going to really hurt an offense. Those are, you know, two guys that are supposed to be in your top three, and with Vladdy you're getting slightly less, and with George you're getting a lot less so far. And it's kind of beyond some of the bad luck and the early season sickness and some of that stuff now. So it has been a really tough situation for the Blue Jays, who were also hitting Kirk four or five a lot of last year. And things have been going better recently, but he was the silver slugger at catcher. And they've been asking for just for him to get back to league average offense, frankly, now. So, you know, there's a lot of issues too. Like, you could certainly argue that if Alek Manoah was league average, they'd be four or five wins better also, but it's just coming from so many places that I'm not sure that the moves at the deadline could patch that all up. It really has to come from within.
Yeah, I would say at the deadline, especially when it comes to just in like a philosophical sense making moves at the deadline, you can't start the year with a team that needs a bazillion fixes in order to make your team more competitive. Like, I feel like the deadline is not for complete overhauls. What it is for perhaps injury fill-ins, like when we saw the Braves make a boatload of trades in the wake of Ronald Acuna Jr. tearing his ACL when the year they won the World Series. Or perhaps, you could kind of look at that to a lesser degree, certainly with Paul DeJong being acquired in the wake of a Bo Bichette injury. But it's for that, or it's for tweaking what is already a very, very, very good team, or maybe I shouldn't use three varies, maybe one vary, or just a good team, right? It's for tweaking things. I'm not sure, and I'm not saying necessarily, Ben, that the Blue Jays required a complete overhaul, but it did feel like going into the deadline, they required maybe like three or four things to really be at the top of the American League East, or at the very least, or even more, the American League as a whole. And perhaps the deadline, them not going out there and making ginormous moves outside of filling in for Bo, perhaps it does underscore the fact that, again, they are not a bad team, but they're not one of the teams that are going to be going out there. And then again, you know what? Caleb Joseph, he was on the call today, and Caleb has said to me many times that you make the playoffs. You play 162 games just to have a chance at rolling the dice in the playoffs, as we've seen so many times for other unlikely World Series champions. I'm not saying the Blue Jays are necessarily World Series champion caliber right this second after a 13-3 loss, but I don't know. At the same time, it does feel like there were a lot of expectations heaped upon the trade deadline, and I'm not sure the I don't want to say correct moves, but I'm not sure if like the needed moves necessarily were made.
Yeah, I do personally think that a lot of the expectations were too high. Like, I think right as, you know, Hector Gomez is really tapped in, tweets that the Blue Jays are the closest team to Teoscar Hernandez.
Right.
Now it's, if they don't get Teoscar Hernandez, the deadline's ruined. And, I mean, look, I've said this many times, I'll say it again. I love Teoscar Hernandez. He's one of the most enjoyable Blue Jays to watch that they have had over the past, you know, 10 to 20-ish years. He's having a career worst season. I'm not sure whether they got him or not was what was successful. I think both of us circled in on Tommy Pham, who really felt like someone that should go. And there was still, you know, some bad luck mixed in. I'm not excusing the lack of impactful bat, but hey, would they have spent some of that capital on a different bat had Bo Bichette not gotten injured the day before the deadline, necessitating that they get a shortstop? Like, I'm not sure Paul DeJong is a Cardinal, or is a Blue Jay, pardon me, if Bo Bichette doesn't get injured literally the day before the deadline. But, I mean, in a way, it's better than getting injured like tonight, where the Blue Jays wouldn't have been able to address right. it. But it's a lot of things came together, and there weren't any huge bats that were traded today. Like Jamer Candelario and Tommy Pham, you know, no offense to them, but they're the headliners of a trade deadline offensively. And Jamer Candelario plays first and third, so the Blue Jays didn't have a shot. I think that, you know, they could have done a little bit more. I agree there. I think, though, essentially Tommy Pham is the ceiling of what they could do more. I don't think that their inability to get Teoscar Hernandez, for example, is a huge indictment, because the Phillies weren't able to get Teoscar Hernandez either. No one was. For some reason, Seattle didn't trade him, and a couple other guys went down that way too. The Padres bought on the fringes despite being below 500 and denied the market a bunch of bats. So, the Cubs won 8 games in a row and refused to sell, and all of a sudden that takes not just Cody Bellinger, but a couple guys off the market, and they buy Jamer Candelario, tightening up the market too. So it was a weird year. I like the expanded playoffs for what they do for, you know, a lot of baseball teams that are in and around contention, but I'm not sure that they're going to make trade deadlines more interesting going into the future, because a lot of teams bought and a lot of average teams just did nothing today. And I think that to a certain extent, the Blue Jays were victimized by that, because the real winners in the trade deadline were all the teams who got starting pitchers. Like, who's talking about the Cubs as the huge winner of this deadline because they traded for Jamer Candelario, even though I will acknowledge he had a phenomenal Cubs debut today.
He did. He absolutely did. And the Cubs won again, which is frankly wild. So we'll get into the standings watch on the other side of the break. Before we take the break, let's get to one more call. Guy joining us from Maple. Guy, what's on your mind? Thoughts on the trade deadline?
Yeah, so I'll start off by saying, just to address what you just said there, I think the trade deadline should be pushed out 2 weeks. I think if you do that, you have it like at August 15th. I think a couple more teams will drop out of the playoff race and maybe there's more action. So saying that, I'll start off with a positive. If you look at the Blue Jays, you just have to take out one number, and that's their record against the Red Sox and Orioles. You take out that, they're a 6-10 baseball team. 6-10 brings you with the third best record in the majors. So I'll hang my head on that right now, considering that the majority of our games aren't against Baltimore and Boston. Now, as far as the trade deadline is concerned, you know, I look at this a different way. I don't want to hear this business about inventory, guys weren't traded. That's a bunch of baloney, because this trade should have been made a month and a half ago. And if you look back 3 years ago in 2020, I remember all the players on the Jays were looking at, you know, their management team to make a move. They didn't. Everyone was in shock. And what happened? We missed the playoffs in the last day of the season. Last year, same thing. We were expecting a fireballer in the bullpen, maybe two. We get Zach Pop and Andrew and Bass. This year, we need two sluggers or at least two hitters. And again, this should have been addressed over a month ago. And Shil, you remember what we talked about on Saturday? I'm going to throw it out there, because I did say this, or on Friday rather, I did say this. I go, what happens if Bo Bichette or Guerrero gets hurt before the trade deadline? I didn't think it would happen in a million years.
You did say that.
Yeah. And, you know, it was more for after the trade deadline, that if someone gets hurt like a Guerrero or Bichette, you're screwed. You only have two bats. You have Merrifield, you have Bichette. I shouldn't say two, sorry. Merrifield, Bichette, Kiermaier, and Jansen that have been consistent all season long. There's too many holes in this lineup. Atkins dropped the ball again. And I just wanted to ask you my question, guys. If this team does not win a playoff round, does this mean that the Atkins era should be over? Because they've done absolutely nothing since these two guys have been here. I'll hang up and listen.
Before you go real quick, I do want to ask you, because I don't disagree that there more could have been done given where the Blue Jays are as a franchise. Like given where they are in a team sense, I think it did require more. Having said that, I mean, like, I just, my only question is, I was just thinking about this while you were talking. Like if let's say they did need another bat, and obviously we agree that they did, then Why would that bat have been available a month ago and as opposed to today when no real bats moved? Like, I don't really think it would have made much difference. If Ross Atkins called up Jerry DePoto in Seattle and said, "Hey Jerry, I want to get Teoscar from you. What'll it cost?" If he hangs up the phone, he's probably hanging up the phone today too, right?
So listen, if you're making moves like Jordan Hicks and you're trading these prospects, you're going for it, no? Are you not going for it in some way? Or what are we doing? Are we going to try to win the World Series, or are we trying to win one round? If you're making these moves, then you do have to go all in. And I just feel like the management team, the laid-back mentality of Atkins, I mean, it's just like Anthopoulos. He saw he had a good team. He went for it. He went all in. We came up short, even though I still think to this day we had the best team in the majors that year. We should have won. But they went for it. They went all in. I don't want to give up a Tiedemann. I get it. But you know what? If I have to give up an Orlevis Martinez and somebody else to get an outfielder, I'm sure there is one team out there that they could have gotten a decent bat for. And I mean, that's just my opinion. It's just that this is the third deadline out of 4 years where this management team deserves an F for what they did. And that's just my opinion. But anyways, hey. Guys, listen, great show again, as always. Yeah, let's hope we can win a game and get a split.
Yeah, hey, Guy, appreciate the call. Definitely, I appreciate the perspective. And Ben, I think so. I asked Guy the clarifier there because I was curious because it never really felt as though the Ricky Tiedemanns and Orlevis Martinezes and Addison Bargers of the world were available. But I guess Guy's point is that they should have been available if you wanted to get a bigger bat. And perhaps I think that's just like an opinion thing because I don't really feel like. For me, I don't really feel like I'd rather see the best young prospects in the organization traded now to make a flawed team slightly better. I'm not calling them a bad team, but perhaps a flawed team. Very few teams in all of baseball are not flawed, but I don't know. As far as Guy's question as to what happens to Atkins, I will say, like, if let's just say they miss the playoffs. Let's just say I don't think they will, but let's say they did. I think there is a valid conversation to be had about whether or not he should retain his job after so long, if only because the shelf life for all general managers and managers and front office executives is perhaps not as long as we think, because, you know, unless you're like the Bill Belichicks of the world, you're probably getting let go anyways after like 7 to 10 years, which is exactly where more or less we are these days. So if they miss the playoffs, then yeah, there probably should be some changes, but I admit I don't think they will miss the playoffs.
Yeah, first of all, if I had to guess today, I mean, I'm not a great predictions person, but I would not lean that they'll miss the playoffs. And for me, I do feel in a certain way about this, the way that I feel about, you know, at times when the manager might be blamed for a run of play. I still think I go back to what we talked about earlier in the show. I mean, do they not supply this roster with an elite player in Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's not playing to his talent? Did they not supply this roster with an elite player in George Springer, who's not playing even close to what the expectations are? Did they not draft Alek Manoah, who, you know, was phenomenal last year? I'm not here to say that they made every right move. I mean, I think there was a convenient ignoring of Whit Merrifield being acquired at the deadline last year, but I do think they've had some underwhelming deadlines. Don't get me wrong there, but I think if you become, you know, a franchise that takes the attention off of the people playing out there and goes just to, you know, the people on the periphery, whether it's front office or managers or coaches or whatever, you do like a New York Knicks thing where you have a new president every year and a new general manager every year. Obviously, these guys have been around for a while. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know if I can attribute several players underperforming to them. Like, I just think that, you know, if they were getting the production that, you know, Vladdy, even half the production in between what Vladdy's doing now and what he did in 2021, how different of a team would this be? If they were getting even last year's George Springer, how different of a team would this be? So it's, I think, certainly something that could happen because I think that's the way that sports goes. But for me, I tend to draw the majority of my focus to what's going on the field. And I think for a lot of the players, it hasn't been good enough. Now, I also do, you know, subscribe to Guy's point to a certain extent, too, that, like, hey, they're not playing the Orioles and Red Sox for the rest of the season. They're going through some ebbs and flows where they look real bad, and then all of a sudden they look real good when they're not playing essentially against the Orioles and the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And there are still certain things, you know, we're going to be our most down on a night where they lose 13-3 and be, you know, most up on a night where they sweep the Arizona Diamondbacks. But For me, I think a lot of it has to do with just guys underperforming, and I think that there's a lot of factors involved with that, most of which should be attributed to the specific guys who are underperforming.
Yeah, you win one game against the Orioles and Red Sox combined through the 1st of August, and on the other hand, you sweep teams like the Diamondbacks, the Braves. You were one bad, not just bad, horrific inning away from sweeping the Dodgers. I mean, like, it's pretty wild. The you use the term ebbs and flows, the ups and downs. It's a roller coaster ride, certainly, with this team, but one that will certainly continue, because the Blue Jays series against the Baltimore Orioles, at the very least, is not done. Two more to go at the Rogers Center. We'll talk about those games, tomorrow's pitching matchup. We'll get to the standings update on the other side of the break. There's still some time to call us, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590 is the people's text line. Lots of text to get to. Get to all of that straight ahead. You're listening to Jay's Talk, Show and Ben on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Adley, Ben Shulman here with you for another, like maybe 10 more minutes or so. Breaking down certainly a 13-3 loss for the Blue Jays at the hands of their division rivals, the Baltimore Orioles, but certainly discussing all the trade deadline action now that it is in the rear view. So you can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. We'll get to the text line in a sec, because I have not gone to it at all tonight. But before we do that, time for the Major League Standings Watch, presented by Bet365. With Bet365, you can watch thousands of live games, build your own bet, and you can even make a bet while the game is still being played. 19+, play responsibly, Ontario only. So the Boston Red Sox are still in action right now against the Seattle Mariners. They're up 5-1 on Seattle in the bottom of the fifth inning. Of course, the Baltimore Orioles are done after their game here. The Tampa Bay Rays beat the Yankees today 5-2. Randy Arozarena, if you haven't seen the highlight of this, he blasted a home run in New York. It was not a Yankee Stadium special. He annihilated baseball in New York today. But the Rays did win 5-2. And in the wild card race, the Houston Astros, the team ahead of the Blue Jays for the second wild card right now, Framber Valdez no-hit the Cleveland Guardians. The final score was 2-0. It was the 16th no-hitter in Astros history. So they beat the Guardians 2-0. Framber Valdez with a no-hitter, and he is as filthy as he was last year. But with all that having been said, at the very least for the American League East, here's how things shake out right now. The O's are 66-41. The Rays are 66-44. The Blue Jays 59-49. The Red Sox entering play are 56-50. Yankees are 55-52. So, Ben, very quickly, I guess, if the Red Sox win tonight, they're up by four runs in the fifth inning. If they do end up winning this game, they will go, both the Blue Jays and Red Sox will go into tomorrow with the Red Sox back just 1.5 games in the division and, of course, in the wildcard race, because they're the team right behind the Blue Jays in the wildcard race as well.
Yeah, I got a good news, bad news situation for you. Oh. Bad news, that would be really close. Good news, Eugenio Suarez just hit a moonshot two-run home run. So that game actually, literally as you were setting me up, went to 5-3. So at least, you know, the fatal flaw of the Red Sox is they can hit a lot, but they can't really pitch. We'll see what happens. But it's certainly concerning. I mean, the Blue Jays, you know, put themselves in a good position over the end of the first half and start of the second half. But if they're going to do the same thing now that they did in mid-May, I think it was, you know, they swept Atlanta. That looked all great. And then they went on to lose three series in a row to Boston, or not Boston, to Baltimore, Tampa Bay, and New York, and really, you know, kind of fall back into you know, kind of the fringes or even less than of the wild card. That would be really concerning. So I think, you know, things, you know, if you want to go to sleep a little bit easier at night, things are even sadder in Yankee land than they are right now up north. But other than that, the Red Sox are climbing. They've been playing pretty good baseball despite some losses, three losses in a row, I think it is, going into tonight. And the Rays, you know, despite their recent skid, they're playing the Yankees, who have been playing so bad. So when teams competing around you are playing each other, it's good when you win, and it's terrible when you lose, because you know someone's going to win, but you also know someone's going to lose. So hopefully for the Blue Jays, if they can start putting some wins together, then they can take advantage of the fact that one of Boston or Seattle is losing every night, and one of Tampa Bay or New York is losing every night. And by the way, 16 Houston no-hitters. I mean, they were founded a little bit before the Blue Jays, but come on, 16 no hitters they've gotten to watch. Let's get like a second Blue Jay no hitter. How about that? That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be nice. Of course, you know, whenever the next Blue Jays no hitter comes, it won't be off the hands of like Kevin Gausman. It'll be off the hands of like Yusei Kikuchi. Yeah, it'll be some completely random. It'll be like Ricky Tiedemann or something. It'll be someone like who you never expected. Maybe you do expect that from Ricky. I don't know. It'll be someone who you have no expectations for, and then it happens. But hey, that's the way it works. But you look ahead to the schedule, and of course, two more games against the Baltimore Orioles here at Rogers Center Wednesday, Thursday, and then a three-game set in at Fenway Park in Boston. So that three-game set, depending on how the Red Sox acquit themselves against the Seattle Mariners, definitely looms large. That's Ben Shulman. I'm Shoaib Ali. Let's get to the text line, because I've been saying it all night. I haven't gotten to your text, so let's do it. 590-590, name and location. I'm just going to read you a bunch of texts, Ben. This is from earlier in the evening, from during the game, some from certainly since I asked about your trade deadline thoughts. But Ethan from Markham says, easily the lowest point of the season. The team looks unmotivated and are not having fun. The ABs need to be better, as well as the competitiveness. I see here Jeff in Mississauga, Shapiro and Atkins need to be held accountable. Their predecessor in Atlanta should give them some pointers. No extra bats at the deadline. I see here a number of thoughts on the deadline itself. It says here, a tie in Beaumont. Deadline was not that inspiring. Glad to see Ryu out there. Not terrible. Pitching to Mountcastle, is that a good idea? He feasts on Blue Jays pitching. Thoughts. Like, there was a weird moment in the seventh inning, Ben, today, where it, you know, perhaps a curious thought to pitch to Mountcastle. He grabs the RBI. I think it was two batters later they intentionally walk Austin Hayes. I know it's probably related to like having the lefty hitting Henderson face a lefty and Yenesis Cabrera, but I mean Henderson also homered off a lefty earlier in this very game. And I'm not saying like Mountcastle deserves the four finger treatment that they gave to Otani over the weekend, but I mean, like, boy, I don't know what it is, but Mountcastle sure seems to like hitting in the Rogers Center. If there's a trade deadline target for next year, just go and make Mountcastle a Blue Jay, because even if he does not play that well here ever again, it's probably best to just have him never face the Blue Jays from an opposing standpoint, because he just continually does damage.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Otani, but he gets the closest to being Otani when he's playing against the Toronto Blue Jays. Like, there's never a time that he's more comparable to Shohei Otani than that. And I will say, I've been on this train mostly ironically, like not that seriously because it's so unlikely, but for a while of Ryan Mountcastle, I do believe, is going to leave the Baltimore Orioles when he can be a free agent, as well as he hits against the Blue Jays. He is in a ballpark where he's a right-handed pull-side power hitter, and they move the wall back to make it impossible for right-handed pull-side power hitters to hit home runs. Like, they've just disrespected his craft completely. Unfortunately, it's not personal, but you know, they're setting up their ballpark for Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman and all these guys, and Anthony Santander and all these guys. So you know, if Mountcastle's on the market and he loves Canada, then hey, you know, like, let's see if the Blue Jays can get him into a Blue Jays uniform at some point. I do think that Caleb brought up a decent point when there was a runner on third in a 4-3 game of maybe just walk him, because I don't know, at this point, like, it isn't even this year and last year. It's like a 4-year trend of his entire major league career. And I figure any time that you can avoid pitching to that guy, avoid pitching to him, because he does so much damage against the Blue Jays.
More text in the text line, 590-590. I see here, let's see. Vince in Aurora, in hindsight, I'm not upset about what they didn't do. I'm happy they did not give up some high-level prospects for this team. Horrible loss today. I'm out. Vince is out on the team. He also texted in just to say pathetic. That was the only other text I got from Vince. Paul in South Frontenac, so disappointing that we didn't get a bat at the deadline. My expectations were high, but I wonder if they were created by the media. He also sent a text that had like a link to a book you can buy on indigo.ca, and he said, I recommend this book for Atkins. I clicked on the link. It takes you to a book that says Hope is Not a Method, notes for like business leaders, which is, I mean, that's pretty funny. I'm not gonna lie, that's pretty funny from Paul.
It's very funny. Yeah, I can't, you know, look, opinion agreeing or not, That's pure humor, and I can't disagree with the methods there. That's very funny. So I appreciate that, especially after a 13-3 loss at 11-12 Eastern.
Yeah, next time I'm in the bookstore, I'm gonna go read the excerpt. I think the abstract, see what that book is about. Nick in Windsor, hey guys, great show. I think we checked off one of three boxes at the deadline. In my opinion, we got the reliever we needed, but still need an impact bat to fill the three spot in the lineup and a better option off the bench. Dan from Beamsville, I would have liked the Jays to get that big bat, which Ross Atkins had spoke about a few weeks ago. I seriously thought they'd try to go after Teoscar Hernandez, and that Espinal or Biggio would be included in part of a trade. I kind of did think that maybe one of Espinal or Biggio were going to be on their way out of here, and it was weird because I was on the field earlier, Ben, and I walked, so I was with Dan Shulman and Ben Wagner, and everyone was on the field pretty much. Every member of the beat, whether they work for Sportsnet or not, was on the field in front of the Blue Jays dugout. And Ben and Dan tried to walk back into the clubhouse, and then it was closed. So they had to walk back out and then walk like around the behind the home plate and then through the visitors dugout. Yeah. And that does happen sometimes. Usually they close the home dugout, the home clubhouse before. But it was a little sooner than perhaps anyone had anticipated. So it kind of did make me feel like, oh, man, like maybe someone from this club is getting traded. Maybe it was just a precautionary measure, but I did genuinely think there was going to be another move. You know, I do wonder, you and I have talked a lot about Davis Schneider, but I do wonder if maybe there was also an aspect of Atkins thinking, hey, maybe some of the options in the minor leagues are better than any of the options that were at least available. We already talked about Tommy Pham, for example, and I agree that they could have found a way to have gotten that done given what the Mets got back for him. But, I mean, you know, I do kind of wonder if maybe maybe they just feel like Schneider or someone else could come up from the minors and contribute to this team in a more meaningful way than, I know Otto Lopez was placed on the 60-day IL today, but then perhaps, Nathan Lucas or Ernie Clement, for example.
I mean, I hope so. Like, I, you know, you've heard me. I'm a Davis Schneider campaigner, and I will wear that on my chest. The guy's got a 991 OPS at AAA with a team leading 21 homers and 45 or 43 extra base hits in 85 games. That's more than an extra base hit every two games, not to mention he walks almost as much as he strikes out with a 424 on base percentage. Like, I am so in on this guy, I'm probably too in on him, frankly. But I think that he certainly should be up and trying to be with the Blue Jays. The one thing I would say on the note of trading, you know, Espinal or Biggio, just if your opinion is that you think that the baseball community at large thinks that these guys aren't very good players, then why would another team want them? Like, neither of them are young. It's not like they're prospects. I think that Biggio is had an okay year. His hitting, especially with the power that he brings, I think has been more important to the team than Espinal's hitting, and he's even played a little bit less recently, certainly. But I would see them more as candidates to go down to the minors had the Blue Jays added something. And I will say on the one note, while I'm not sure that it will be the big bat people think is going to come, I really don't think they were ever acquiring a top three or four in the order bat. I do think there are at least a couple interesting DFA'd guys / free agents that maybe they take a flyer on, because you're right. Like, they haven't used, whether it's been Nathan Lucas or Ernie Clement, who, I mean, you know, good for him that he hit a double today, or Jordan Luplow or whoever it was. They've barely used their 26th roster spot, and they get a 27th one coming up in a 27th and a 28th one coming up in September, one pitcher and one position player as the rosters expand. So why not take some flyers on some guys like a Trey Mancini, who, if you get the best out of them, or even half of that, could be a big improvement. And if you don't, it's a little bit of money that you spent, not prospect capital, and you end up, you know, letting them go, and it's fine.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz is the guy that we've heard discussion about before. I kind of wonder if the Jays are still in on Nelson Cruz, for example. Trey Mancini, for me, a little bit less so, but you know what? I'll have to ask Caleb Joseph, a former Trey Mancini teammate, about some Mancini inside knowledge, perhaps, when I talk to him tomorrow. Real quick, just to wrap up here, Ben, we got a couple minutes left here. You know, I do kind of wonder, as we discussed Espinal and Biggio, when Bo does eventually return, because I think DeJong has options for the next 2 years, I believe. So if he plays well, obviously they're going to pick up the option for next year. I kind of wonder if maybe if all is well, because obviously he's going to be the everyday shortstop going forward until Bo is back. But when Bo does eventually return, I wonder if you see situations this season as Merrifield plays more in left field, and you actually see DeJong play at second base. I wonder if, at the very least, even if he's the backup shortstop, if DeJong's presence has in some way, shape, or form made Espinal, for example, redundant, or maybe it's insurance in case both Merrifield and Chapman leave in free agency. Like, I could see multiple layers to acquire Paul DeJong.
Yeah, I do think, you know, in a way, people were looking for the outfield bat. I do think kind of that Merrifield becomes the outfield bat. I think you're right in the fact that if, you know, Bo is healthy within a week or two, you probably get less playing time for Espinal because DeJong will play second base, and less playing time for Varsho because, like you said, Merrifield will play in left field. So I do think that it affects some of the guys that people have been asking for to rotate out of the lineup a little bit more for, you know, whatever that is worth. And I think that, you know, they do have a nice setup here with DeJong, like you mentioned, where they have options for next year and the year after that, and terms of the deal that St. Louis pays the buyouts for them if they don't want to pick up Paul DeJong. And if they do want to pick him up, his ceiling is quite high. I mean, he was nearly a rookie of the year at one point. He's a guy who's hit 30 homers in a season from the shortstop position. So this could end up being a bigger addition to the Blue Jays than we know. Like, as much as people are thinking about their loss today being about what they didn't add, no matter who they added today, they weren't going to be in the lineup today, and they might have lost 13-3 anyway. You know, Teoscar Hernandez wouldn't have made it to play in this game today from Seattle. But it will be interesting going forward to see when Bo's healthy, how the lineup shakes out.
Yeah, maybe DeJong plays perhaps as soon as tomorrow. We'll see when he arrives in Toronto. That's Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Crown Rust Protection. New and used vehicle prices are rising and inventory is scarce. Avoid the hassle of buying prematurely by making your vehicle last longer with Crown Rust Protection. For a special summer offer on rust protection, visit crown.com today. For Ben Shulman, Ben Wagner, Caleb Joseph, Stephen Coyle, Connor Lamont, David Siss, I'm Sho Ali. The Jays look to bounce back tomorrow for their first win of the series, their second win against the Orioles overall. It'll be Kikuchi versus Rodriguez on the mound. Blair and Barker are back for the rest of the week. Ben and I are back for the Red Sox series on the weekend. I'll talk to you later.